From Pacifica, this is Democracy Now!
I believe waterboarding is illegal. I believe it's prohibited under the Convention Against Torture and the Geneva Conventions. But I don't believe that Judge Mukasey should be denied confirmation for failing to provide an absolute answer on this one subject.
For the Senate to make a bold declaration about torture and waterboarding by rejecting Judge Mukasey is appealing. But to defeat him would abandon the hope of instituting many of the reforms called for by our investigation.
Two Democratic senators, Chuck Schumer and Dianne Feinstein. Their votes for Michael Mukasey meant the Democratic-led Judiciary Committee has recommended his confirmation as Attorney General to the full Senate. We'll play excerpts of the committee hearing, then Rapture Rescue 9/11. Disaster response for The Chosen. We'll speak with journalist and author Naomi Klein about disaster capitalism, from the wildfires in California to the floods in Mexico. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The U.S. occupation of Iraq has reached another grim milestone. On Tuesday, the Pentagon confirmed 2007 has become the deadliest year for U.S. troops in Iraq since the invasion 4 years ago. Six U.S. service members were killed Monday, bringing this year's toll to 853. Meanwhile, the Associated Press is reporting the Pentagon is secretly reviewing plans to ease enlistment standards to make up for a recruiting shortfall. The number of recruits seeking waivers for criminal behavior rose 3% last year to nearly one-fifth of all prospective service members. Two-thirds of the waivers were approved. The United Nations has issued a new warning over the role of private military firms in Iraq and Afghanistan in a report set for release today. The UN calls the reliance on private companies, quote, new modalities of mercenarism. The report says private guards are akin to irregular combatants. The private military industry has come under unprecedented scrutiny following the September killing of 17 Iraqis by Blackwater guards. The UN panel says more countries should sign on to the International Convention Against the Recruitment, Use, Financing, and Training of Mercenaries. Only 30 governments have ratified so far. In Afghanistan, at least 60 people have been killed and 50 injured in a suicide bombing targeting Afghan lawmakers. The dead include six parliamentarians as well as school children and senior citizens. It was the worst suicide bombing in Afghanistan since the U.S. invasion in 2001. The Taliban's denying responsibility, but it's the lone group known for suicide attacks inside Afghanistan. In Pakistan, police are vowing to shut down a planned rally against President General Pervez Musharraf's imposition of state of emergency. Former Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto says she'll lead the protests south of Islamabad today. Bhutto returned to Pakistan Tuesday. She immediately denied charges of talks with Musharraf over a power-sharing deal.
If you are hearing that a meeting is about to take place, no such meeting is scheduled. If you are reading reports that I was consulted, no such consultation took place.
Lawyers continued a third day of demonstrations today, although in smaller numbers, thousands of people have been detained in the crackdown. The Senate Judiciary Committee has approved the nomination of Michael Mukasey as Attorney General. Democratic Senators Chuck Schumer of New York and Dianne Feinstein of California joined all nine Republicans on the panel in backing Mukasey. Eight Democrats voted against. Mukasey's confirmation was initially in doubt after he refused to condemn waterboarding as a form of torture. His nomination is expected to go to the Senate floor by next week, where his confirmation is virtually assured. We'll have more on the Senate vote after headlines. House and Senate negotiators have approved a $459 billion military spending bill. Democrats rejected an amendment that would have added $70 billion for the Iraq War without restrictions. Senate Appropriations Chair Robert Byrd says Democrats will refuse to provide further blank checks for war funding. But senior Democrats say they still intend to provide up to $50 billion for the Iraq War as part of the bill. a U.S. district judge has ruled Iraqi torture victims and their relatives can proceed with a lawsuit against a defense contractor involved in abuse scandals at Abu Ghraib and other U.S. prisons in Iraq. The lawsuit says interrogators with Khaki International practice torture or mistreatment of Iraqi prisoners. In the same ruling, Judge James Robertson dismissed claims against co-defendant Titan on the grounds the company's guards were under the military's exclusive control. But he said the case against Khaki can go forward because company officials were also involved in the chain of command. Local and gubernatorial elections were held in states around the country Tuesday. In Kentucky, Steve Beshear won an upset victory over incumbent Republican Ernie Fletcher. In Mississippi, Republican Governor Haley Barbour was easily reelected to a second term. In Maryland, Sheila Dixon became the first African-American woman elected mayor of Baltimore. In Texas, Mayor Bill White was reelected to a final two-year term. In Utah, voters overwhelmingly rejected the nation's first statewide voucher program that would have subsidized private schools. With a Republican governor and legislature, Utah's rejection was seen as a major defeat for Republican-backed school voucher proponents. Civil rights leaders gathered in Washington Tuesday to renew calls for a massive march next week on the Justice Department. Leaders, including the Reverend Al Sharpton and Martin Luther King III, have called the rally to protest what they call the government's failure to prosecute hate crimes. The march plans follow newly disclosed details of Bush administration's role in installing a Republican majority on the nation's top racism and discrimination panel. According to the Boston Globe, President Bush maneuvered to ensure the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights was composed of a Republican majority. The commission has long been staffed equally with members of both major political parties. To skirt the practice, President Bush appointed two Republican commissioners who then promptly changed their affiliations to independents. After the changes, the agency canceled a slew of planned evaluations supported by civil groups. These included assessing the budget for civil rights enforcement, financial aid to minorities, and whether inaccurate census collection has deprived non-white areas of entitled financial federal spending. Instead, the commission's output has included reports criticizing school integration and affirmative action in school admissions and small business incentives. Six Nicaraguan farm workers have been awarded more than $3 million in damages for being rendered sterile from pesticide spraying by the U.S. company Dole Food. Dole continued to spray the pesticide, DBCP, despite repeated warnings over its health risks. The judgment marks the first time foreign farm workers have won a case against Dole in a U.S. court. The punitive damages will be on hold while Dole appeals. Dole is expected to face several more lawsuits for pesticide use abroad. Two top officials with the internet giant Yahoo were called before Congress on Tuesday to testify on their role in the jailing of a Chinese journalist. Shi Tao was sentenced to 10 years after Yahoo passed on his email and internet protocol address to Chinese officials. Speaking before the House Foreign Affairs Committee, Yahoo CEO Jerry Yang and General Counsel Michael Callahan defended Yahoo's role. Shi Tao's mother was sitting in the room. At the urging of Congressmember Tom Lantos, Yang and Callahan bowed their heads to her in apology. Lantos told the pair, quote, "While technologically and financially you are giants, morally you are pygmies," he said. In privatization news, new figures show electricity prices have risen far higher in states adopting market competition than in those using traditional government rates. According to the group Power and the Public Interest, customers in privatized areas paid over $7 billion more than customers in government-regulated areas. Since 1999, prices in deregulated markets tripled over regulated ones. In Bolivia, President Evo Morales joined with thousands of elderly citizens to march for a proposed government stipend to Bolivians over the age of 60. Morales wants to steer funds from an energy tax to give seniors a monthly sum equal to $310.
¿De dónde y con qué plata se pagaba el bonosol?
From where and with what money was the bonosol paid? It's a stipend of solidarity, and we respect solidarity. The government must support the elderly. I repeat, it's an obligation of the state to attend to our dear old men and women.
The tax was created 2 years ago following the ouster of two U.S.-backed presidents. The Department of Homeland Security has admitted it's been slow to process some 15,000 requests for removals from the government's terrorist watch list since February. 2,000 removals are asked for each month. The backlog now takes 44 days per case. The watch list still contains more than 750,000 names. And in Illinois, nearly two dozen high school students have been suspended and now face possible expulsion for holding a peaceful protest against the war in Iraq. Last Thursday, students at Morton West High School in the town of Berwyn locked arms and sang protest songs in an approved area on school grounds. One participant said the group had been told they would face no more than a Saturday detention for missing class, but they were each given 10-day suspensions and told they could be expelled. The American Civil Liberties Union says it may take up the case. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The Senate Judiciary Committee approved the nomination of Michael Mukasey to be Attorney General on Tuesday by a vote of 11-8. Mukasey ultimately owed his approval by the committee to two Democrats who broke with their party to support him, Chuck Schumer of New York and Dianne Feinstein of California. They joined all nine Republicans on the panel in backing Mukasey. Eight Democrats voted against him. Mukasey's confirmation had been in doubt after he refused to condemn waterboarding as a form of torture. Now his nomination is expected to go to the Senate floor by next week, where he is virtually assured to win confirmation. The Judiciary Committee's ranking Republican, Senator Arlen Specter of Pennsylvania, said at yesterday's hearing he'd been dissatisfied with some of Mukasey's responses to questions about waterboarding and torture, but that he ultimately decided to approve his nomination.
What do we have to say about the morality of waterboarding? Is it banned by some international commitment, the Geneva rules? Very fuzzy area. Justice Jackson made a lot of famous statements, and one of his most famous statements was that the Constitution is not a suicide pact. Not a suicide pact. So we're not bound by the Constitution to undertake conduct which would be a suicide. So that it is my thought that Judge Mukasey went about as far as he could go. I thought he was not on solid ground when he said he wasn't read in to the program, that he didn't know what waterboarding was. Waterboarding is generally well known. Not being read into the program, I thought, was candidly an excuse and a flimsy excuse. Certainly, he had been investigated sufficiently, so the president was confident to tell him the highest secrets of the country. And he could have been read into it and could have given us a judgment. And he said in answers to my letter of October 24th that he was reluctant to put people at risk. And we know that a couple of weeks ago, former Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld was served with legal process, and unclear exactly what it was, perhaps a warrant of arrest. We know that some countries are exercising extraterritorial jurisdiction on crimes against humanity, that Prime Minister Sharon was under indictment from Belgium, and we know what happened with Pinochet, so that there is a risk factor. So I think he went about as far as he could go, and I think now it's a matter for the Congress. I want to express one other concern, and that is a concern about what Judge Mukasey may have as a view of excessive executive authority. I'm very concerned about the presidential signing statements where we pass legislation, and under the Constitution, he has the authority to either veto it or sign it, and he cherry picks. And he did it in two contexts, which were very troubling. One was after his negotiations with Senator McCain, and we legislated on interrogation. He signed the bill and said he didn't have to follow it. And we passed out of this committee the Patriot Act, passed the Congress. And we gave the FBI additional powers on the condition that we had more oversight. Then he signed the Patriot Act and he said he didn't have to abide by the conditions on oversight. And I asked Judge McCasey about that and I got back an answer which is totally unsatisfactory. He said, I agree with you that presidential signing statements should not be a vehicle for creating unnecessary confrontation. Well, what does that mean? Is there necessary confrontation? And he says he will keep in mind the concerns when advising the president. I think the attorney general should have said the president negotiates an arrangement with Congress, signs a bill, he ought to stand by it and not act to the contrary. All factors considered, I think that the balance is decisively in favor of confirming Judge McCasey. And I look forward to congressional consideration of this issue of waterboarding. We're the people who ought to decide it. And with his assurances in writing that he will back us up, that's good enough for me.
Pennsylvania Senator Arlen Specter, the ranking Republican on the Senate Judiciary Committee. Senator Patrick Leahy, the committee chair, decided to call for a vote before any other panel members spoke.
So why don't we call the roll and then go back to individuals in order of seniority on both sides. We'll alternate sides. Clerk will call the roll.
Mr. Kennedy.
No.
Mr. Biden.
No, by proxy.
Mr. Cole.
No.
Mrs. Feinstein.
Aye.
No. Mr. Feingold.
No.
Mr. Schumer.
Aye.
Mr. Durbin.
No, they're not.
Mr. Cardin.
No.
Mr. Whitehouse.
No.
Mr. Spector.
Aye.
Mr. Hatch.
Aye.
Mr. Glassman.
Aye.
Mr. Kyle.
Aye.
Mr. Sessions.
Aye.
Mr. Graham.
Aye.
Mr. Cornyn.
Aye.
Aye, my question.
Mr. Brownback.
Aye.
Mr. Coburn.
Aye.
Mr. Chairman.
No.
Mr. Chairman, the votes are 11 yeas, 8 nays.
The nomination is passed by the committee. It will be sent to the floor, and the leader will set a time to schedule. Could I... One, I appreciate the interest of all members of the public and the committee's work. There are many people who have come to hear this hearing. I expect everyone here to be respectful of the committee and other members of the public. And if there are, certainly everybody is able to express an opinion, but not audibly. If there are audible expressions of opinion, I am directing the police to remove the people who do that. Whether they agree with my position or not.
Senator Leahy threatening to remove protesters from the hearing room after some members of the anti-war group Code Pink, who were in attendance, spoke out in opposition during the vote roll. Massachusetts Senator Ted Kennedy was the first to speak after the committee vote.
The Department of Justice is in dire need of new leadership to guide our nation back to its constitutional moorings. Under Attorney General Gonzalez, the department lost its way as a genuine force for justice, too often served as a rubber stamp for the White House and as a facilitator and enforcer of political objectives rather than the rule of law. After a period of such tarnished leadership in the department, we need a clear, decisive, straightforward Attorney General who's not afraid to stand up for the Constitution and the rule of law, even if it means disagreeing with the President of the United States. I had hoped that Judge McCasey could be that person. He is certainly intelligent and has demonstrated admirable dedication to public service. As a federal judge for almost 19 years, he was by all accounts fair and conscientious in the courtroom and even showed admirable independence at times. But after reviewing and re-reviewing Judge McCasey's answers to questions from members of this committee, I have concluded that he is not the right person to lead the Justice Department at this critical time in our history. We need a leader who will inspire confidence in the rule of law. We need a leader who is unafraid to speak truth to power. We need a leader who is worthy of the trust we place in our Attorney General to support and defend the Constitution of the United States. Michael Mukasey, regrettably, is not that leader. Like many of my colleagues and many American citizens, I'm deeply troubled by Judge Mukasey's evasive answers about the legality of certain techniques of torture. While the nominee acknowledges that torture is unconstitutional, he has repeatedly refused to acknowledge that the controlled drowning of a prisoner, waterboarding, rises to the level of torture. What is the big mystery here? Over and over again, civilian and military tribunals have found waterboarding to be an unacceptable act of torture. My concerns begin with Judge Mukasey's answers to our questions about waterboarding. Waterboarding is a barbaric practice in which water is poured down the mouth and nose of a detainee to simulate drowning. It's an ancient technique of tyrants. In the 15th and 16th century, it was used by interrogators in the Spanish Inquisition. In the 19th century, it was used against slaves in this country. In World War II, it was used against us by Japan. In the 1970s, it was used against political opponents by the Khmer Rouge in Cambodia and the military dictatorships of Chile and Argentina. Today, it's being used against pro-democracy activists by the rulers of Burma. When we fail to reject waterboarding, this is the company that we keep. According to ABC News, former intelligence officers and supervisors admitted in 2005 that the CIA used waterboarding. In fact, the vice president confirmed its use. And the intelligence officers and supervisors described the waterboarding this way. The prisoner is bound to an inclined board, feet raised and head slightly below the feet. Cellophane is wrapped over the prisoner's face and water is poured over him. Unavoidably, the gag reflex kicks in, and a terrifying fear of drowning leads to an almost instant plea to bring the treatment to a halt. Malcolm Nance, a former master instructor and chief of the training of the U.S. Navy SEALs, described it as horrifying to watch. If it goes wrong, it can lead straight to terminal hypoxia. When done right, it is controlled death. Judge Mukasey cannot say to this committee that waterboarding is torture. He calls it republic, and indeed it is, but he refuses to condemn as unlawful. And then, in perhaps the most stunning and hollow promise reportedly made by a nominee for Attorney General, in my 45 years in the Senate, we are told that Judge Mukasey agreed to enforce a ban against waterboarding if Congress specifically passes one? We are supposed to find comfort in the representation by a nominee to the highest law enforcement office in the country that he will, in fact, enforce the laws that we pass in the future? Can our standards really have sunk so low? Enforcing the law is the job of the Attorney General. It is a prerequisite, not a virtue, that enhances a nominee's qualifications. Make no mistake about it, waterboarding is already illegal under United States law. It's illegal under the Geneva Conventions, which prohibit outrages upon personal dignity, including cruel, humiliating, and degrading treatment. It's illegal under the Torture Act, which prohibits acts specifically intended to inflict severe physical or mental pain or suffering. It's illegal under the Detainee Treatment Act, which prohibits cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment, and it violates the Constitution. The nation's top military lawyers and legal experts across the political spectrum have condemned waterboarding as torture. And after World War II, the United States prosecuted Japanese officers for engaging in waterboarding. What more does this nominee need to enforce existing laws? It is the job of the Attorney General to enforce our Constitution laws. The Attorney General must have the legal and moral judgment to know when an activity rises to the level of a violation of our Constitution, treaties, or statutes. But this nominee wants to outsource his job to Congress. That passing of the buck is completely unacceptable by a nominee who wants to be the highest justice official in our country. This nominee has failed to demonstrate that he'll be clear, decisive, straightforward leader that the Department of Justice so desperately needs. For all these reasons, I oppose this nomination. After 6 long years of reckless disregard for the rule of law by this administration, we cannot afford to take our chances on the judgment of an attorney general who either does not know torture when he sees it or is willing to look the other way to suit the president.
Democratic Senator Ted Kennedy speaking in the Senate Judiciary Committee. When we come back from break, the two Democratic senators who voted for Mukasey's confirmation, Feinstein and Schumer. Stay with us.
Something we teach infants must leave imprints of the militant in each and every sentence. Our words are relentless because our people are defenseless, so we extend this, hoping we all comprehend this. Resistance is something we teach infants must leave imprints of the militant in each and every sentence. Our words are relentless because our people are defenseless, so we extend this, hoping we all comprehend this.
It is written an explicit vision of vocal precision with fiery flavor concocted in grandma's kitchen, packed full of wisdom, fall in line for a bowl. So feed the
soul. Welfare Poets Resistance here on Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. California Democratic Senator Dianne Feinstein was one of two Democrats who broke with her party to support Michael Mukasey's nomination as Attorney General.
The president has said publicly that he will not send another nominee to the Hill. What does that mean? It means that for the remaining 14 months of this president's tenure, we will effectively have an acting attorney general. It means that most likely there will be recess appointments this winter of the 10 positions in the department which are filled by acting or interim individuals. I don't believe a leaderless department is in the best interest of the American people or the department itself. And I think that's something really worthy of consideration. I believe the president would not send another nominee to the Hill. I believe he appointed this man because he believes he is mainstream. I believe there was even discussion about whether he should appoint him or appoint somebody who was even more conservative. Now, let me bring up the subject of torture. I believe waterboarding is illegal. I believe it's prohibited under the Convention Against Torture and the Geneva Conventions. Yeah. I believe that waterboarding is prohibited for the United States military under the Detainee Treatment Act and the United States Criminal Code. And I believe that neither the military nor the CIA should use waterboarding. But I don't believe that Judge Mukasey should be denied confirmation for failing to provide an absolute answer on this one subject. Now, as was said earlier, last week, Judge Mukasey specifically told Senator Schumer that if Congress passes a law that outlaws waterboarding in all circumstances, the president would have no legal authority, no inherent authority under Article 2 to ignore it. Now, I know that there are very prestigious civil rights groups in this country that believe that this difference in United States law, in other words, the Detainee Act on one side, providing a prohibition against waterboarding for anyone in any branch of the military, and no specific coverage of the CIA, there are those that believe it doesn't really matter. What the CIA does is still covered under these international treaties to which we are a signatory. I believe that's correct. Nonetheless, it is very easy to remedy, And it is very easy to simply say waterboarding is prohibited in any vehicle that we may have before us. I think there is an argument that can be made to do that, to take this off of the table of any other discussion and to make it very, very clear. So that's something I think we're going to have to decide and come to grips with in these months. But I really believe that this man is going to be an independent breath of fresh air in this department. I really believe, though, that he has a very short time in which to put his imprimatur on the department. And I would hope that he moves rapidly. I hope he will step forward and be a truly non-political, non-partisan attorney general, that he will make his views very clear, and that once he has the opportunity to do the evaluation he feels he needs on waterboarding, will be willing to come before this body and express his views comprehensively and definitively. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. There will be...
Committee Chair Patrick Leahy directing security to remove a protester from the hearing room after they spoke out at the end of Senator Feinstein's comments. The remaining protesters, members of the anti-war group Code Pink, stood up in silence in the back of the room, holding up signs in opposition to Mukasey and torture. Later in the hearing, New York Senator Charles Schumer, the other Democrat who broke with his party to support Mukasey's nomination, explained the reasons behind his vote. Schumer had initially recommended Mukasey to the White House as a consensus candidate.
Today, I voted to confirm Michael Mukasey as Attorney General of the United States. I did so for one overarching reason. The Department of Justice, once the crown jewel among our government institutions, is adrift and rudderless. It desperately needs a strong and independent leader at the helm to set it back on course, and I believe Judge Mukasey is that person. As this committee's own investigation has found over the last 9 months, the department has been run into the ground by the Bush administration. The department has been mired in scandal, inexplicably fired U.S. attorneys, political prosecutions, ideological litmus tests for career lawyers, mass departures by civil rights lawyers. The list goes on and on. But now we're on the brink of a reversal. There is virtually universal agreement, even from those who oppose Judge Mukasey, that he would do a good job in turning the department around in these areas. We need a leader to take care of the department, not a caretaker, as the president has promised if we reject Judge Mukasey. To accept such an unaccountable caretaker, I believe, would be to surrender the department to the extreme ideology of Vice President Dick Cheney and his chief of staff, David Addington, without check. All the work we have done, the months and months and months of hearings and discussions, all the work we have done to pressure Attorney General Gonzalez to resign would be undone in a moment. Now let me be clear on the torture question. I deeply oppose this administration's opaque policy on the use of torture, its refusal to reveal what forms of interrogation it considers acceptable. I deeply oppose all forms of torture. It debases us and opens our own citizens to abuse abroad. Specifically, I believe that the cruel and inhumane technique of waterboarding is not only repugnant, but also illegal under current laws and conventions, period. I also support Congress's efforts to pass additional measures that would explicitly ban this and other forms of torture. When Judge Mukasey came before the Senate Judiciary Committee, he refused to state that waterboarding was illegal. That was unsatisfactory to me and many members of the committee on both sides of the aisle. But he has personally made clear to me that if Congress passed further legislation in this area, the president would have no legal authority to ignore it, and Judge Mukasey would enforce it. From a Bush nominee, this is no small commitment, as it flatly contradicts David Addington's own view of executive power and the president's authority to order torture. And this is an important point. Even without the proposed law in place, Judge Mukasey would be more likely than a caretaker to find on his own that waterboarding is illegal. Indeed, his written answers to our questions have demonstrated more openness to ending the practices we abhor than either of this president's previous attorney general nominees have. We could expect no such openness from a caretaker attorney general. In many respects, Judge Mukasey reminds me of Jim Comey, a former deputy attorney general in the Bush administration, who disagreed with us on many issues, but displayed admirable, unique independence. He's been widely praised for it. Now, I understand and greatly respect the view of some of my colleagues that the tortured question trumps all other considerations. For the Senate to make a bold declaration about torture and waterboarding by rejecting Judge Mukasey is appealing. But to defeat him would abandon the hope of instituting many of the reforms called for by our investigation. And if 6 months from now, with a caretaker attorney general, the same policies continued, the victory in defeating Mukasey would seem hollow. No one questions that Judge Mukasey would do much to remove the stench of politics from the Justice Department. I believe we should give him that chance.
New York Democrat Charles Schumer explaining why he supported Mukasey's nomination as Attorney General. The Senate's Democratic leaders are expected to schedule a vote by next week, where he is virtually assured of being confirmed. Judge Mukasey's nomination thrust the issue of waterboarding and torture into the spotlight. In her latest book, The Shock Doctrine, award-winning author Naomi Klein has a chapter all about the history of torture. She joins me now in the Firehouse studio. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Naomi.
Thank you, Amy. Good to be with you again.
Respond to what you've just heard.
Well, I think that was an absolutely shocking display. And I think what's most shocking about it is this idea that this is somehow a question of good government and this, the torture question can be belittled. I mean, what we just saw was lawmakers knowingly voting in favor of someone who has said that one of the classic modern torture techniques, I mean, the classic torture techniques of the French in Algeria, for instance, were simulated drowning, electroshock, and rape. These are the three main tools of contemporary torture. And this is a man who has said to the world that one of those key techniques, simulated drowning, water torture, is not illegal. So with that knowledge, he was just endorsed. And to elevate a man who has said this to the highest legal office in the country, I think just puts every one of those lawmakers, but particularly the Democrats who voted for him, into bold new territory. They've just crossed a line because they can no longer pin this on Bush. They can no longer claim ignorance. Anyone who faces these techniques in the future, they will be complicit in those war crimes, in those crimes against humanity. Everybody who voted for this man.
It's interesting, you just heard Charles Schumer, the New York Democrat, saying we can just pass a law against waterboarding. Of course, Ted Kennedy said we have passed laws against torture. But that idea of passing a law, but that law also has to be signed by President Bush. And whether or not he signs it, if he does sign it, he can do what he has done more than 1,000 times, which is sign a signing statement next to it, which says he doesn't have to abide by this law.
Exactly. And it's amazing to belittle the importance of what it would mean to take a stand in this moment in the face of this statement that Mukasey has made that he's not sure that waterboarding is illegal. He has put that forward. And now there's an opportunity for it absolutely unequivocal repudiation of that position. That power is there, and it's just slipping away. It's an amazing moment. It's an amazing crossing of the line into active complicity. It's bad enough that you have Democrats in power who are unwilling to hold the Bush administration legally accountable for the war crimes they've already committed. But now they've moved into endorsement. And they can say all they want that they're not actually voting for him when it comes to torture, but they just did it because he has said it publicly and they no longer have plausible deniability. It's gone.
You've written about torture in Chile and Argentina.
Yeah, and waterboarding or simulated drowning. And when you read the Truth Commission reports from Chile, Argentina, Guatemala, these are it's a technique that comes up again and again. Amy, what waterboarding is? It's instilling the belief that you are going to die. We talk about. And people often do die. I mean, it's happened many times. And we talk about torture so often in this country as being just about getting information. Torture is a tool of state terror. That is what torture is, and that is why it's prohibited. It is about instilling, it's a method of instilling terror in an individual, and it's also a method of spreading terror throughout a whole society, saying we are willing to use these techniques. If you cross us, you will be subject to these techniques. So it is the science of terror. It is literally terrorism. You know, if you have somebody in your control and your goal is to convince them that they are going to die, and as they gasp for breath, their lungs are filled with water, what are you if not a terrorist?
It's interesting. We had Stephen Gray on yesterday, the independent journalist from Britain who has done so much to track extraordinary rendition flights, these kidnapping flights. And he said in the end that he wants to apologize for himself and all journalists, that he's always used that term simulated drowning, but that waterboarding is actual drowning because you're filling the torture victim's lungs with water.
Yeah. And I mean, you are approaching death and you believe you are going to die. You have the ultimate fear. And so how does this not fit every definition, both international and domestic, against the prohibition of cruel treatment?
I encourage people to go to our website at democracynow.org the day before yesterday's show, Monday's broadcast, when we interviewed Henri Alleg, who is the French journalist who is covering the Algerian Revolution in 1957, taken by French military and subjected to water torture, to waterboarding. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. When we come back, we'll talk to Naomi Klein about another issue she has been addressing, the second part of the title of her book, The Shock Doctrine, The Rise of Disaster Capitalism. Stay with us. Saudi Choir of Cuba, Pastoral. Here on Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report, I'm Amy Goodman. Rapture Rescue 911, Disaster Response for the Chosen. That's the title of Naomi Klein's latest article in The Nation. It's about the wildfires that have just ravaged Southern California and the spate of new companies that offer privatized solutions to emergency management, only for those rich enough to afford it. Wildfires in California and now floods in Mexico. Naomi Klein, talk about what you call disaster capitalism and how it's played out in this time of global warming.
Well, disaster capitalism, what I mean by that is the use of disasters to push through very unpopular policies, often involving privatization. The last frontier for the privatization of the state is the privatization of those core state functions. You know, the only thing left that hasn't already been privatized and outsourced is, and this is pre-Bush administration, is the Army, is the police, is the fire departments. And these core state functions are really seen as this the last great privatization free-for-all. It's already entered healthcare, it's already entered water, it's already entered electricity, the media. So this is the last frontier. And what we saw during the California firefires was something really extraordinary. I mean, people have gone back to their neighborhoods now, and they have see neighborhoods which have just been destroyed by the fires, but a few houses standing, and are asking questions about why some of those houses were saved. And in some cases, you can't explain it. You know, it's mysterious. But in some cases, it's not mysterious. The reasons why some houses were saved and others were not is because the people who lived in those saved houses pay insurance to the company AIG, and AIG offers privatized fire response.
So, American Insurance Group.
Yeah, exactly. And they have a special service, a sort of VIP concierge service, where they spray the homes of the wealthy in certain select zip codes. These are people who pay around $19,000 a year in insurance premiums. And as part of this special service, they get men in fire trucks with the red hats and the bright red fire trucks. They look, for all intents and purposes, like real firefighters, spraying down their homes with fire retardant. But during the California wildfires, they actually did more than that. They actually put out fires and bragged to the press that they saved houses while the house next to it went up like a candle. So this is what I mean by rapture rescue 911. I mean, it's a bit of a flip statement, but you know, I think many of us have known for many years, and we've talked about the fact that there are more and more people in this country very close to the Bush administration, inside the Bush administration, who really believe that the end times are coming, and you know they think, you know, them and Kirk Cameron are, you know, going to be saved, that the hand of God is going to bring them up to the gated city, and the rest of us are going to burn. And this is, you know, the fantasy of the rapture, this escape from the inferno down below. And I think actually what we're seeing is that heaven can wait. We're getting the rapture down here on earth, that we're getting like a reenactment of these biblical scenes. And maybe this is the appeal of this end times fascination among some Republican lawmakers, that this is actually their response to climate change. They don't need God's hand. They have a privatized disaster response. And maybe it also explains, Amy, and this is what's really alarming, is that, you know, the environmental movement, the language of the environmental movement, we often hear, you know, this is one crisis that we're all facing together. You know, even Dick Cheney has grandkids. We all are in this together. But when you see these privatized disaster responses, privatized firefighting, you have Blackwater in the midst of this pitching themselves as privatized humanitarian response and building tent cities and saying, you know, we can do this better than the state, then I think we really need to question this basic premise that we are all in this together, and that maybe this explains the slowness and the unwillingness to take real action on the most pressing issue of our time, which is climate change.
You talk about Florida homeowners in last year's hurricane season and another company.
Yeah, I write about this in the book, that a year after Katrina, a new company was launched called HelpJet, which is a charter air service that launched with the slogan, turn a disaster into a luxury vacation. And it's once again this concierge model. All of these new companies work on what some of them are calling a country club model. You pay an annual fee, or you pay a one-time lump membership payment. So there's another company called Sovereign Deed that is even bigger than HelpJet and is offering comprehensive VIP disaster rescue. You pay $50,000 a year. But back to HelpJet, you pay as if you're joining a country club. And then if a hurricane is coming to your part of Florida, you get an early alert, and a concierge calls you, or you call the HelpJet concierge, and you tell them if you want to go to Disneyland, if you want to, you know, book some five-star resort, and they bill it as an escape from the failures that we witnessed during Hurricane Katrina. It says, you know, escape the madness, the lines, the chaos, just have a first-class experience. I mean, it's quite extraordinary. You read this, and it seems like something that the Yes Men, you know, the satirists have pulled off. And, you know, when I first read about this, I actually emailed the Yes Men and asked them if they were behind it. But it is not satire. This is actually happening.
Naomi Klein's Sovereign Deed, you mentioned. Talk yeah. about this company.
Well, this is happening, you know, simultaneous to the wildfires. There's a company called Sovereign Deed. It's one of the key, it's connected to the mercenary firm Triple Canopy and also a retired brigadier general back from Iraq named Richard Mills is one of the key executives in this company. And they have just announced plans to set up a kind of a privatized FEMA in Pelton, Michigan, northern Michigan, a rural part of Michigan that happens to have a very modern regional airport. And the idea is that they're going to be turning Pelton, Michigan, into their national disaster response center, once again, only for their members. So if you go to the Sovereign Deed website, and I really recommend that people do read about this company in their own words, because what's really extraordinary about it, Amy, and this is where you have some similarities with a company like Blackwater, is that it's run by people straight out of the military and intelligence who are now, have now gone into the private sector, and they're saying to people, they're scaring people, they're saying, you can't count on FEMA. You can't count on the National Guard. We live in disastrous times. Their website is just filled with sort of apocalyptic news about terrorist attacks, climate change, all of the pandemics, all of the things that we might face, and we think we're going to face them collectively. But their message is, you can't count on the government. I should know. I used to work there last week or whatever it is. Pay your $50,000 membership and $15,000 annual fees. And this company is stockpiling drugs, fuel, water, and for an extra premium payment, you can get a VIP rescue in the midst of some sort of unnamed disaster. And this is just amazing, Amy. I mean, think about the way the country responded after September 11th. The heroes of that tragedy were the first responders. And when the Bush administration announced the Department of Homeland Security and this whole new era of Homeland Security, I think people really thought that that meant a support and funding of the public first responders whose mission it is to protect the whole country, everyone, not just the VIPs. Now here we are, six years later, and the situation in California, we heard once again there weren't enough firefighters. The National Guard was in Iraq. The public sector, you know, despite all the propaganda around Schwarzenegger, there were many, many failures. But now we see this emergence of this parallel VIP privatized disaster infrastructure.
On that issue of AIG, American International yeah. Group, that has Firebreak, the Firebreak spray systems, the wealthiest zip codes in the country, you write about, protected. What does this mean for higher insurance rates for regular working people in California?
Well, I mean, I think they set the bar at a whole new level. And I think what's going to happen now, and we're hearing this, Firebreak is saying they're getting many more calls and that this is the new standard. This was their little laboratory. And, you know, if your house burned down next to somebody who had this level of fire protection, you're going to call your insurance company and going, why didn't I have my home sprayed with special fire retardant? I mean, why wouldn't you if you're paying very high premiums already? So now what I think we're going to see is a new race where all of the insurance companies are now going to start offering these VIP services. And yeah, rates will go up. But I think more than that, you know, as I've been talking about this with people, what we're going to hear more of is sort of blaming the victims of these natural disasters who don't pay the higher premiums to get this special service. You're starting to hear the language of personal responsibility, much like the sort of welfare debates of you know, it's up to you to protect you and your family. You can't look to the government. It's very similar, actually, to the way in which people discuss health care, that it's your personal responsibility. Now it's your personal responsibility to protect your family from terrorist attacks, from climate change. And the assumption is, we can't count on the state, which is just extraordinary when you think about the hundreds of billions of dollars that have been spent since September 11th in the name of Homeland Security. Where has all that money gone? It's gone to these private companies who have built this parallel sort of shadow state.
Naomi Klein, talk about the floods in Mexico that haven't gotten half as much attention.
Well, I mean, this is in many cases, people in Mexico are saying this is a greater disaster than Hurricane Katrina, more displacement, and it's really made very little There's been very little news. There's been very little charitable giving comparatively. People are talking about a kind of a disaster fatigue. I've been tracking it, and we've been getting emails to our website about sort of early examples of disaster capitalism in Mexico. It's a little bit too early to tell. But I think what we're seeing internationally, and what I think we should watch for in Mexico, is that in the same way that we see these companies domestically who see climate change as a emerging market, a big business, not, and we have to be clear, in developing alternative energy, sustainable energy, but just in servicing this increasingly volatile, dangerous, warming world. Well, in Peru this summer, there was an earthquake, and there was another one of these breakthroughs in disaster capitalism, where after the earthquake, an American company, an American service company called Aramark, got the contract to build evacuation camps, which is something that's traditionally done by the UN, traditionally done by NGOs. Now it's a private contractor, a for-profit company that actually provides food for prisons, going in there and seeing disaster response as internationally as an emerging market. And these are the first evacuation camps in the world that I know of that come with mini McDonald's outlets. So this really is seen, and I think we need to understand this. Disasters are seen by a growing sector of the economy as an exciting new market opportunity. And so we're in a situation where these companies are going to be putting, or are already putting, a counter pressure on the government, where you have the citizens, you have the people of the world saying, we want action on climate change. But these companies have a vested interest in just staying on the same disastrous course. But the two-tiering of disaster response, I think we really need to think of very urgently, because this is moving really fast. You know, Amy, at the end of the book, at the end of The Shock Doctrine, I sort of predict that this is what's going to happen. I didn't expect it to happen 3 months after the book came out. I was thinking, you know, years, not months. And of course, you know, I take no pleasure in, you know, in being right about this prediction. This is what I call in the book a situation of disaster apartheid. And the stakes of this, you know, I think we see really clearly in the healthcare system and in the education system, that when the elites can opt out of a public system, the urgency about addressing a crisis in the public system, a crisis in the public school system, a crisis in the public health system totally erodes, because they're outside the system. They're sending their kids to private schools, to charter schools. They have hospitals that are in great shape. So the urgency of a crisis in the public system dissipates. If you bring that same logic, the logic of the public health, of the healthcare, of a private, multi-tiered healthcare system, to firefighting, to the police, to the response to disasters, then you have something really frightening, because it's not just that they lose the urgency to fix a crisis in first responders, to fix the fact that there aren't enough fire trucks. It's that they lose the urgency to address the most pressing issue of our time, which is climate change.
It's interesting that in the elections yesterday in Utah, Republican governor, Republican-led legislature, and school vouchers were defeated.
Yeah, because these are not popular policies. And this comes down to such a core principle of, you know, is every life of equal value? And people are seeing that erode. And, you know, in all of these two-tiered models, people, I think, are increasingly identifying this logic throughout and rejecting this logic. You know, I wrote in the column that in all of the privatized responses, Blackwater has been saying, you know, Blackwater has been using the fires in the San Diego area as a real public relations gift. They have been building tent cities. They've been handing out all kinds of humanitarian aid. And they say, you know, this is just what we do. We just help communities. But the fact is that we know that Blackwater isn't a humanitarian organization. They have the mission, protect the principal, protect whoever paid them. And this is what permeates all of this privatized disaster response. It's not protect everyone. It's protect the principle. So if we believe in other principles besides that you should pay to be saved, the time has come to protect the principle.
Naomi Klein, I want to thank you very much for being with us. Naomi Klein is author of the New York Times bestseller, The Shock Doctrine, The Rise of Disaster Capitalism. This is Democracy Now! Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Shruhab Nokadus, Aaron Mate, Angeli Kamat, Jeffrey Hagerman, Steve Martinez, Nicole Salazar, Ricardo Lobo, Mike DeFilippo, and Miguel Noguera, our engineers. Special thanks to Becca Staley. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.